Dominic Company 102.5, 106 for the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios, and presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Caroline Fenton is here, 5 o'clock on a Wednesday. Caroline, how are you?
We're doing a full, 12-hour shift, 5 a.m., 5 p.m., look at us.
I know. Did you take a nap today?
I did not. I powered through.
I did not take a nap any day, and I got to tell you that I am fairly exhausted. Although Caroline and I have been on at 5 o'clock in the morning the last 3 days, and I've thoroughly enjoyed working with Caroline again, even though her NDA takes are crazy. Joe Rexrode, your one about how you think that Cleveland is for sure better than the Milwaukee Bucks now, and I don't know why you'd think that. Joe Rexrode is with us. Hello, Joseph. How's the gout?
Hello. It's getting better. Thanks for asking.
The bout with gout. And with that, it's time for Jared versus Joe. Now, normally you guys know that Caroline sits there and asks the questions of Jared and Joe. But this is the Stillman & Company program, and I call the shots. And as I said at the beginning of the last hour, I had a little trick up my sleeve that does not know about, Caroline does not know about, and Jake, you don't know about it either, do you?
I do not. I have no idea.
Okay, this week's Jared versus Joe is going to be a little bit different, and here's why. Jared is going to ask the questions.
Oh, this should be fun.
Number one, what should the future 16-team college football playoff format be and why? Caroline, you go first.
Well, I will start by saying that I think the future college football playoff format should be 12 teams, but it is not going to be 12 teams. So the future of the college football playoff with 16 teams should be 4 automatic bids from the Big Ten, 4 automatic bids from the SEC, 2 from the ACC and Big 12, and the rest at-large bids. And the reason I think it should be that is for a few things. First and foremost, when I think about what's important to college football, there is nothing more important to college football than the fans. And what do fans want? Do fans want to watch Alabama Mercer and Georgia Montana State? No. But in a world in the college football playoff that it is decided in a boardroom when it is really the most important thing is how many games have you won? And really more importantly, how many games have you lost? What's the motivation for teams like Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State and Michigan and good teams to play other good teams out of conference when that's just going to raise their likelihood of losing a game and then their chances of making the college football playoff are slimmer? But in a 4-4-2-2 model, it doesn't matter if you lose those non-conference games as long as you win in your conference. So that's one thing. The second thing that I think is important is I think there needs to be some sort of regressing to the mean and standardization of schedules, which will never exist in college football because it's just there's just too many teams and there's too much inconsistency. The Big Ten and the SEC are undeniably the best and most stacked and most difficult schedules in all of college football. I think you need to have a way to kind of adjust for that. Like if we're comparing SMU's 131st ranked strength of schedule with Alabama's 7th every single, like what are we doing here? There needs to be like some sort of something in the college football playoff system that adjusts for that. And really the final thing is I'm fed up with the college football playoff committee. Everybody tells me that they want the college football playoff to be decided on the field. Me too. A 5-11 model does not decide the playoff on the field. It decides it in a boardroom. The 4-4-2-2 model is what most resembles the NFL. And in the NFL, the 7 best teams in the NFC get in, the 7 best teams in the AFC get in. Well, in this model, 4 best teams in the SEC, 4 best teams in the Big Ten, so on and so forth. That's decided on the field. I think it makes the most sense. And I think that eliminating the college football playoff committee as much as you possibly can is a positive thing in this sport.
Joseph.
Yeah, that might be your worst take I've ever heard from Caroline Fenton. I mean, first of all, let's all agree here. You say we can all agree. Yeah, I'd like to see Alabama Mercer go away too. You think that the 4-4-2-2 model is going to get rid of those games?
No, I don't think it's going to get rid of those games.
Continue to happen.
I don't think it's going to get rid of those games, but I do think a 5-11 model gets rid of Alabama, Florida State that we get week one, or LSU, Clemson that we get week one. Like, we're not going to have those games anymore. Lane Kiffin even said it as much last year. Why would we schedule these tough non-conference games when all that matters is that we go 11-1 or 12-0? Why would you schedule those difficult non-conference games if it's going to lower your likelihood of getting into the playoff?
Why are you scheduling those games if all that matters is your conference standing? Because if all that matters is that you get into the top six, and by the way, hold on, let me go ahead and give my take here. You know, you talk about what fans want. You think fans want these stupid gimmicky play-in games on championship weekend? I don't. And also, why the heck, if these teams are only worried about their division, say, all that matters is what they do in conference. Yeah, money? So you're going to tell that to a coach? Okay, just do it for money. Okay, fine, we'll play the game, and I'm going to sit all my key players because this game means nothing. If the committee is judging you by your strength of schedule, which the SEC is pushing now, and they're right to push it, to make it more impactful, to make it more important, well, then you better play those games. And those games are going to matter because you're going to be compared against everybody else. But all that matters is what you do in your conference. Those non-league games mean nothing. And even if you play them for money, you're just going to sit your quarterback. They're preseason NFL games. I mean, we're all guessing hypothetically how this will be impacted. Sure they are. Why do they matter? They matter not at all. If we're judging people by the strength of schedule and by how they perform against their whole schedule, those games do matter. You better play a game like that. And that's especially true of the SEC if they're not going to go to 9. So, I mean, right there, I think your argument is flawed. And, yeah, look, I mean, I'm just – probably more than anything, I'm offended by the entire idea in this arena that's supposed to be competition that we would just grant these bids to the SEC and Big Ten because they have more money. I can make the case, Carolina, in a given year, especially if Bill Belichick's going to get North Carolina going, I can make a case that in a given year at Florida State, Miami, Clemson, well, fine, but I can make a case even without that, that in certain years the ACC can have more good teams than the Big Ten. This is just the entire reason they want this is, or the number one reason, and this is two different Big Ten ADs have told me this, because they want to know the certainty of the money. They want to know every year they can budget four teams worth in the playoffs. It's a huge deal in the current environment when you're trying to figure out player compensation. But I'm sorry, the SEC doesn't need this at all. They will do better without this. And no, everyone should reject the idea of giving the Big Ten a life raft in that year where they only have three worthy teams.
I am with you that I think the play-in games are kind of dumb. Like, I could do without those. But, you know, I like the model. But, like, everyone says, well, the SEC, that wouldn't be good for the SEC. So the SEC is doing what's best for them and what's best for college football. Well, what's wrong for Tony Petitti for fighting for what's best for the Big Ten? Because the only reason that the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 don't like this is because it doesn't help their own respective conferences' bottom lines. All that Tony Petitti is doing the exact same thing. He's just fighting for a different structure.
But I understand why he is, and that's fine. I mean, good luck to him, but I hope not too much luck, and I'm very happy because I thought the SEC was going to go along with this, but in Destin, the coaches are like, why the hell do we want this? This doesn't help us, and they're right, and I applaud
the
SEC
for – Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
The SEC coaches don't want this because they don't want to add a ninth game.
Well, I mean, if that's what's necessary, the Big Ten's trying to say, well, if you're not going to do this, then you bet. What the Big Ten is saying is, fine, we'll do 5-11, but then you must add the ninth game. That's the rub, right? Now, I don't know how that's going to work out, and they should add a ninth game. But I would also make the case that there are years where a lot of SEC teams' eight-game schedule still has way more challenging Saturdays on it than most Big Ten teams' nine-game schedules. And again, that's why I give the SEC coaches credit, and I am happy to see that they didn't just get ignored after they left Destin. You know, the SEC is giving them serious regard, and they should. And so I think it's going to fail. I hope so. I mean, again, anybody who likes competition – should be offended by the 4-4-2-2 idea. And also your point on the NFL, Caroline, yeah, I mean, if we truly had schedules that were equitable to a point like the NFL does, then fine, but we don't. You still, in these ridiculously big leagues, you just can, in a given year, I mean, Indiana's an example last year. They just happened to get a much easier run than some other teams, and they got in the playoff as a result of it.
But you say people who like competition should be offended by this. Isn't this the true essence of competition? Because the teams that get in, get in based off of
automatically
their record and their record
get four? No, because in a certain year...
Based off of their record. How is it competition if it's a bunch of old dudes in a ballroom and a Dallas Ritz-Carlton that's deciding who gets in the playoff?
We've been doing this forever with basketball, and we complain every year, but ultimately, I don't want it to change. I love Selection Sunday. We can tweak the system. We can make it more transparent. We can make schedule strength matter more. I want human beings to be able to look at a situation like Jordan Travis of Florida State being out and say, well, by all numbers, Florida State should be in the playoff. But you know what? They're not good anymore. They lost their quarterback. Alabama's in. That was the right decision. That's why I want human beings making these decisions.
I can't believe you thought leaving Florida State out of the playoff was the right decision.
You wanted to watch that team without Jordan Travis lose by 30? Why?
That team that won the ACC championship against Louisville without Jordan Travis? Yeah, because they did everything right. Because they went 13-0 and they won their conference championship.
Great. And then they lost their quarterback and were not nearly the same level of team.
They lost their quarterback before the conference championship game.
They also lost their backup, but their backup was going to come back.
Right, and I don't care about the backup. They were not good enough to be in the playoff. It was the right decision.
Okay,
I
number
disagree
two.
With that.
Number two, Jacob, if you will, Joel Klatt on his podcast with Tony Petitti, when they were talking about the 5'11 model versus the 4'4", 2'2 model, Joel Klatt thought that the 5'11 model had a very interesting opinion about the 5'11 model. Here's what Joel Klatt said.
I also want to get to that 5'11 model that the Big 12 and the SEC kind of inexplicably threw out there, to be honest. I'm in this not quite as much as you. You're a commissioner, obviously, but this is my profession. When that was thrown out, that was left field when 5'11 was thrown out.
Okay, Caroline, do you believe that 5'11 is some kooky, odd, out of left field theory, as Joel Klatt says?
No. I mean, it's essentially what we had this past year with the 12-team playoff. It was 4-8, four highest-ranked conference-ranked champions, and then 8 at-large bids. Haven't we been talking about the 5-11 model for, like, since the 16-team playoff has been a thing? I don't think that's out of left field, like, in the slightest. I think maybe Tony Petitti and the big... It makes no sense. Like, I mean, Tony Petitti and the Big Ten people might want to make it seem like Greg Sankey has thrown it out of left field, when in reality, I think Greg Sankey just is bringing, you know, new perspective to the negotiating board when the Big Ten thought that the SEC was on board for the 4-4-2-2.
Joe?
This sounds like propaganda. Is just adding, like Caroline just said, this is adding teams what we already have right now. I think Joel Klatt lives in left field and clutches a Jim Harbaugh portrait and sleeps with it at night. I mean, what the hell is he talking about?
Oh, don't forget Ryan Day.
That's true.
I just want one of you guys to say why he's saying this and the level of propaganda the Big Ten is trying to shove down everybody's throats.
Well, I just said it. He is saying this because he wants to make, I believe, that's how I interpret it, he wants to make Greg Sankey out to be the bad guy. And, oh, we were all in agreeance of this 4-4-2-2. And then out of nowhere, Greg Sankey and Dustin goes crazy and throws this wild idea out there. Because I think he might understand, or there might be a sentiment, that it's the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 against the Big 10. And I don't think the Big 10 wants that kind of PR.
Yeah, I mean, look, Sankey. I think Sankey thought the SEC, and this is from talking to ADs, were on board with this. And like again, the coaches, I give them a lot of credit. They were like, "This is stupid." And so it's a pivot. It is a change. But this was, I mean, before we ever talked 4-4-2-2, we were just talking about adding teams, right? I mean, that was my understanding.
My favorite part about this. again, my favorite part about this entire thing is Caroline will not back off her 4-4-2-2 take.
Why do I have to?
Because it's stupid. And
no, it's not. Just because you don't agree with it doesn't make it stupid.
She tried to make
it stupid.
Well, you know, you can do whatever you want. But Caroline has actually had a sitting AD say to her after her argument about 4-4-2-2, yeah, I'm not going with you on that one, which was still one of my favorites.
A sitting AD in?
The ACC.
In the ACC. So, of course, he's not going to be for it. And I understand why the ACC is not for the 4-4-2-2 model. I'm not saying that everybody has to agree with me. I'm not saying that the ACC and the Big 12 should totally raise their hands and say, yep, you know what, Big 10, SEC, you're right. You are the superior conferences. I'm just saying that's what I would like to see happen.
More Jared versus Joe with Caroline versus Joe, a special edition to continue next. Stillman and Company, 125, what is the game?
The big thing for me was the trade that we did the other day. That one feels absolutely right for where we want to go with this team. And then I think Nick is a really value one. Our scouts do a really good job of finding those value guys where you want to get them before they pop. So I think they've done a really good job. So, and then we've got lots of good players. I mean, having Roman Josi for a healthy Roman Josi back in on the defense that we currently have, and the depth that we have there, I think we're going to be really, really good. And that'll make Saros' life a lot better too, because last year there was times it was very unfair for him. And he took a lot of heat for it unnecessarily.
Okay, Barry Trotz yesterday says UC Saros took unnecessary heat last season for his terrible season. Again, statistically speaking, UC Saros had a sub-9 save percentage. As a goalie, he was 20-31-6, and he had 12 RBSs, which is really bad starts. His goal saved above average was -7.6, and yesterday his 8-year no movement clause kicks in. So, Joe Rexroad, we start with you. Was Barry Trotz right in saying Saros took unnecessary heat last season?
No, not at all. And look, this is not just an NHL thing. This is a hockey thing. It's never the goalie. It's always we could have helped him. The goalie's never at fault. He's never flawed. The goalie is fragile and precious, and we must protect him at all costs, including with our public comments. I may have missed something, and maybe it was you, Jared, but I heard you talk about him plenty. We talked about him plenty. We talked about him on our show plenty. I've seen what has been written and talked about elsewhere. I mean, anybody was unfair at all to UC Saros. The numbers are what they are. And I absolutely subscribe to the idea that things were so bad around him that some of those advanced stats, underlying numbers, probably look worse than he is as a goalie. I still think he has a chance to be a good goalie and to be a difference-making goalie, but he wasn't good last year. And even with all that was failing around him, there were times when he could have bailed this team out and he didn't. And I don't think going too far would have been getting personal, and I never saw that whatsoever. You tell me if I missed something. I don't think I did, and I don't think anybody's been remotely unfair, but again, this is what people do. They protect the goalie. And the bottom line is, for all the things we talk about with Barry Trotz that are an issue right now, that are problematic, that contract is number one on the list of why you should be concerned about Barry Trotz right now as the general manager of the Nashville Predators. And so there's nothing more important to his future, in my opinion, than that contract starting to look reasonable, which it does not at this point.
Caroline, was Saros taking too much unnecessary heat?
Yeah, I'm with Joe on this one. Like, it was not a necessary heat. And I'm going to come up with a new adjective, which, Jared, Joe, you feel more than welcome to use if you feel so inclined. Barry sounded a little bit ranty there. That was a ranty statement. It was a little ranty. Sounded like Rand Carthon. Like, hey, everybody. He had a horrific season, but it's be nice to him. Everyone on Twitter, give him a break. No, like Joe said, the numbers are what they are. Saros is going to make what he's going to make. The Predators have promised him what they have promised him. And what he did last season his production last season wasn't good enough. Now, was Soros the only offender this past season? Of course not. No, there were a lot of things wrong with that season this past year and why it was such a disaster of the season for the Predators last year. But Soros isn't innocent in that. So if I'm Barry, or really just as a, you know, listening to that as a Predator fan and somebody who covered the team for a long time, what I want Barry to say is, we acknowledge that last season wasn't good enough. We acknowledge that our fans that spend their time and hard-earned money to come to our games weren't satisfied, and we are doing everything in our power to make up for that. I don't want to hear about unnecessary heat when the season was as bad as it was and Soros was as bad as he was.
Can I just ask this question? When am I allowed to blame UC Soros? Because Barry Trotz and Willie Donick and Chris Mason, and it's like they lose and they don't win in the playoffs and, oh no, can't blame Soros. And then they lose regular season games and Soros gets run out of them and I can't blame Soros. They start off 0-5 and he didn't play in the first game last year for whatever reason. And then in of the four losses, you know, that started after that first loss, Soros had a sub-9 save percentage in two of the four and got run out of two of those games against crappy Seattle and crappy Detroit. So when am I allowed to blame UC Soros? Like, what stat is there that I can say, okay, this is a reflection of him? Because it's like when they win games, it's, oh, Soros, he's so great. And when they lose, it's can't blame Soros. So when? When can I blame UC Soros, Barry? When can I blame him, Willie? When can I blame him, Hal Gill? When can I blame him, Chris? It's my little
I thought you were the question-asking moderator today.
I am. That's my question. When can I blame him?
You can't handle not talking this much?
No, I just want to air out that grievance. When can I blame him, Hal? When can I blame him, Chris?
Well, the Avengers would say never.
I mean...
And I'm okay with not being Avenger. I will say that. But I am getting over this whole, you know, you can't say anything bad about the goalie. Like, the goalie holier than thou sentiment is tired.
He's 5-11 in the playoffs.
And look, is the blame plot pie 100% UC Soros? No. But I'm sick of hearing, well, we got to be better around him. Well, it's the defense. We got to be better around him. The Predators aren't setting him up in good positions to win games. Like, that's just, yes, I'm with you. At what point is it his fault? At what point can we say the goalie isn't good enough? And at what point can we say, yeah, the criticism is fair and justified?
Okay, last one. The Milwaukee Bucks. And what was a shocking move in the NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks yesterday, Damian Lillard has a torn Achilles. He will not play this year. They stretched out his contract and waived him, which was something that I did not know you could do in the NBA, but it created the cap space for the Bucks to sign Miles Turner away from the Pacers as the Milwaukee Bucks try to win another championship with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who has 2 years left on his contract and has been throwing out subtle hints that he may want out of Milwaukee. Joe Rexroad, was it a good decision by the Milwaukee Bucks?
The decision to get rid of Dame?
To get rid of Damian Lillard, stretch out his contract, and bring in Miles Turner. And how much of a threat are the Bucks to win the Eastern Conference?
I think it was worth a shot, and it reeks of desperation to me. But also, if you're them, I would be desperate because the tea leaves have been saying Giannis is like, look, man, it's just not happening here anymore. I got to look around. Of the Hail Marys they could have thrown, I don't think it's, like, worthless or pointless. Maybe there's a shot. Maybe he'll look at that. I mean, they signed Gary Harris. They've done some other things. You know, maybe they'll be able to talk him into staying. So, you know, I think that they were in a bad spot. They have been. They still probably are. But at least they've given themselves a chance, I guess. So I guess I can't say it's a bad move.
Caroline?
I just think committing yourself to $220 million over the next 5 years, which is exactly what the Bucks are doing with paying Damian Lillard, $113 million over the next 5 years, and then paying Miles Turner $107 over the next four. You're paying up $220 million over the next 5 years, and that's the best you got. Like, that, I think that committing yourself to $23 million in dead money over the next 5 years is just bad business. And look, I understand the Bucks were in a desperate position, and I understand that their hands were tied. They also put themselves in that position. They gave away all the picks for Jrue Holiday, which it paid off. They won a championship. But then in 2023, after a couple of early playoff exits, suddenly he wasn't good enough anymore. And they trade Jrue Holiday for Damian Lillard. And then it's been even more early playoff exits. So it just kind of feels like the Bucks right now are stuck between a rock and a hard place. And they just dug themselves into an even deeper hole. Now, the East is wide open. So if the Bucks can make a run in the playoffs, and make a run meaning get to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, get, of course, to the NBA Finals, then yeah, they'll say that was worth it. We can keep Giannis happy. I just, even with Miles Turner, who doesn't really move the needle that much for me, I don't view the Bucks as an Eastern Conference Finals kind of contender, and certainly not a championship contender.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put them at the top of the list if Giannis is there, and I like Miles Turner. I mean, I don't disagree with the ridiculous money involved in this, but no, I still have them behind Cleveland. Them behind Boston.
Even without Tatum,
Indy is toast next year. Well, yeah. Yeah, and now there is some hope for Tatum in the postseason next year, right?
I don't think so, but even if there is, I mean, they've made all the other moves this year to get rid of Jrue Holiday, and they didn't re-sign Luke Kornet, and they got rid of Porzingis, and they got rid of all those guys.
Oh, do not even bring up Luke Kornet in this conversation.
They don't have a post player.
When you've used him as the poster child for insignificant moves in NBA free agency all week long.
So they've got they kind of getting under that second apron, Joe.
Well, Tatum. I mean, look, Tatum has to, and some of these Achilles things are obviously different now. He has to be able to, you know, be there next. But if not, then fine, take them off the list. Cleveland for sure, though. And Cleveland to me this year, if they don't get hurt, I think that they beat Indiana. So I'm still a believer in Cleveland.
Okay, Caroline wins this week.
Yay! Why?
There was something you said in that last part that I agreed with, and then I was going to say you win this week because of that, but I forget what it was.
You don't even have a reason. I mean, it's hilarious.
It was clearly impactful.
Caroline with the 4-4-2-2.
I was not judging like Caroline on the 4-4-2-2 take because I knew what that take was going to be ahead of time. Like, I knew what that take was going to be ahead of time. You know why I'm giving Caroline the win? I'm giving Caroline the win because, Joe, you didn't push back hard enough against her Damian Lillard, they're spending too much money take, when it's like, but Damian Lillard tore his Achilles. What are they supposed to do? Just not do anything about it? And you didn't push back
against
it.
Tear his Achilles every
year
for the next 5 years.
Yeah, you're just talking to hear yourself talk, Jared, but you are the Big Ten. You are, rather than being willing to compete today, you said, you know what? We're just going to get an auto bid, and I'll be the judge. So good job to you, Jared.
Congratulations to Caroline.
Thank you very much, Joe. It was a pleasure.
Talk about a debate between the two. A debate unlike any other. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I heard Andrew Burnett say something yesterday that I gotta tell you, you know, the Trotz thing about the Soros criticism pissed me off, but this one might take the cake. And I think it was a throwaway line, but that's okay. We'll get to it next. Stillman and Company, 125 The Game. Stillman and Company. So tomorrow on the program, we're going to have a lot of hockey talk, because the way that it works is, as far as the people in Canada are concerned, is that yesterday was Canada Day, which is like their July 4th. And then after a couple days, the free agency dust settles, they all go off to their cottages. And when they all go off to their cottages, like, they're done with hockey until basically training camp. And I feel like for us, that's kind of going to be the same way. We're going to put hockey off in the cottage after tomorrow, and then it's pretty much all football until we get going with training camp for the Titans, and then we'll see the Predators, you know, when they hit the ice in October. And I say that because there was something Andrew Burnett had a media availability yesterday, And there was one thing he said that when I heard it, my head popped up. I said, hold on, you got to be kidding me. So Robbie Stanley, I thought, asked a very good question. Remember at the end of the year when Andrew Burnett gave a press conference and we didn't know if Andrew Burnett was coming back as coach or not, and he talked about taking time off to reflect about the horrendous season that the Predators had. This was what Andrew Burnett said. This was the question from Robbie and Andrew Burnett's answer.
You mentioned that at the end of last year, you know, needing to take some time away and get away from it and then going back and reassessing. So as you've done that and you've had some time, what are maybe some of the things that you've come away with that you're trying to really hammer down and correct next year?
Well, we're just kind of in the process right now. That's what this week's about with the coaching staff. Obviously, we made a change. We got Luke Richardson in, and we're just kind of going through the year a little bit. I think you take a step away, and I think a lot of times you take a step away, it wasn't as bad as you really thought. And it wasn't probably as good as it wasn't as good as you thought other years were. So you're trying to improve, and self-improvement, I think this last month as a coach and starting this week, we're how can we improve as a group systematically? Obviously we're waiting to see what our personnel is before we dive right in. And obviously with the length back there that we added, we'll see if we can change a few things and get better in a few areas.
Okay. Now, did you guys, when you heard that cut, did you have the same collective, what, that I had in the middle of it? Let's play this cut one more time, Jake, if we could. Let's play this cut one more time. And again, I'm going to just leave my mic up, Jake, because I'm going to have my collective what when he says it.
You mentioned at the end of last year, you know, needing to take some time away and get away from it and then going back and reassessing. So as you've done that and you've had some time, what are maybe some of the things that you've come away with that you're trying to really hammer down and correct next year?
Well, we're just kind of in the process right now. That's what this week's about with the coaching staff. Obviously, we made a change. We got Luke Richardson in, and we're just kind of going through the year a little bit. I think you take a step away, and I think a lot of times you take a step away, it wasn't as bad as you really thought, and it wasn't probably as good as it wasn't as good as you thought other years were.
What?
So you're trying to improve. And
what?
Self-improvement, I think this.
Hold on. Give this cut to me one more time. I want to make sure I heard that Andrew Burnett said this. Again, play the cut. And we can skip Robbie's question.
We're just kind of in the process right now. That's what this week's about with the coaching staff. Obviously, we made a change. We got Luke Richardson in, and we're just kind of going through the year a little bit. I think you take a step away, and I think a lot of times you take a step away, it wasn't as bad as you really thought. And it wasn't probably as
Stop!
Good as you know.
A lot of times you take a step away, and it wasn't as bad as you thought. What? Hold up. So, Andrew Brown, what was your reflection on last year? Well, you know, when I took a step away and I reflected on last season, you know, hey, it wasn't as bad as I really thought. It wasn't? It wasn't as bad as you thought? Dude, last year was awful. It was an unmitigated disaster. It was horrendous. This team was the third worst team in hockey. The third worst. This team lost 52 games last year in an 82-game season. There was nothing to talk about on the radio every week except, are you going to fire the coach? Are you going to fire the coach? Are you going to fire the coach? The games were unwatchable. The team was awful. The players they were putting on the ice outside of the old guys who weren't worth a crap last year for whatever reason were a bunch of bums I'd never heard of. England, Blankenberg, Willsby, Barron. I mean, I'd see Kiefer Bellows come up. I'm like, who the hell is that? Last year was that bad. And I got to say, the way Andrew Burnett said that, because a lot of his answer was just generic coach talk. It was, well, you know, we've really got together as a coaching staff. We've really decided to go over last year. You know, sometimes take a step back, don't totally see, you know, everything that's shown, that sometimes what's good, it's probably not as good as it felt at the time. And so, you know, we're just really focused on getting the personnel pinned down. Then we'll continue on every day through the process, working up, blah, 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 blah. But here's like I say about using throwaway lines and cliches and everything else that coaches usually do. Andrew Burnett needs to inspire some confidence in the people of this town that he has a freaking clue about what he's doing. So when you sucked as bad as they sucked last year, and make no mistake about it, They sucked. When Robbie asks an incredibly fair question, because you, Andrew Burnett, said that you, Andrew Burnett, were going to take time to evaluate what went wrong last year, I need a thoughtful answer, not some throwaway cliche. Again, you win all your games, or you're not on the hot seat, or people in town think you know what you're doing. You can cliche us till the cows come home. We won't play the cuts. It won't matter because it's whatever. Cliche, coach talk, bull crap, whatever. But when you had the season that they had last year, and you say something as redonkulous as a lot of times you take a step away and it wasn't as bad as you thought, I think to myself, are you crazy? Did you watch last season? Your reflection was, it wasn't as bad as you thought. How bad did you think it was last year? Did you think you went 1-81? You do know that at the exit interviews, one of your highest paid and most notable players basically said, hey, where I used to play, the coach there, he knows what he's doing. And you're going to tell me that wasn't bad? That wasn't as bad as we thought. What? So, again, I know it was probably just a cliche. It was probably just a throwaway line. But when you had the season you had last year and you're asked a totally fair question, which was invited by what you said when you were trying to keep your job at the end of the season, you should answer it with some thoughtfulness about what the hell actually went wrong last year to make us think that you actually have a clue as to how to get the train back on the tracks. A lot of times when you step away, it wasn't as bad as you thought. No, Andrew, let me tell you something, baby. It was that bad. It was a train wreck. Stillman and Company, 1025 The Game. Stillman and Company, I have to say this when it comes to NHL free agency. This time last year, we were all excited about Stamkos and Marchessault and Brady Shea, and we were pumping the tires. And so for all the criticism the Predators are going to get on July 1, they're going to shrug it off because they're going to say, last year, everybody loved us on July 1, and we did not have a very good season, and so don't be upset. But I have to say this. The one thing I do like about July 1 when it comes to being a Predators fan is I see other moves that other teams make, and some of the moves this offseason have just been stupid. And some of the names that have been acquired, I'm like, ew, when I see some of these trades. So I was listening to Boston. I had to listen to Boston radio yesterday. Adam in Portland's like, why are you obsessed with Boston radio? I do listen to Boston radio all the time. But especially when they're talking about something that went down in Nashville, I'm like, oh, I got to listen to hear what they said. So when the Bruins acquired Victor Arvidsson and Tanner Jeannot, I had to listen to the fallout. And they were just crapping on Tanner Jeannot and Victor Arvidsson and the entire crop that Boston, who drafted James Higgins, by the way, that they had brought in free agency, and their crop was awful. And then I heard this, and I laughed my ass off.
How many goals do you think Tanner Jeannot had last year?
I have no idea.
And just real quick, because both of these guys that we're talking about were also Nashville Predators, would you like the quick synopsis of both of these players from our guy Jared Stillman at 102.5 The Game in Nashville?
Yes.
Texted me this morning after both these moves.
Please.
First on Victor Arvidsson. He sucks. And on Jeannot, woof.
I mean,
more on Arvidsson, more on Jeannot.
I mean, at least when it comes to, you know, hey, Jared Stillman texted me a breakdown here. I was sitting in the car and I just laughed out loud because I was like, I do remember texting. I forget what I said. But yeah, I think that sums it up perfectly. Arvidsson sucks. He's toast. He was toast 5 years ago. Jeannot might end up being the greatest trade in Predators history because he sucks. So when you're mad at the Predators and the moves that they make or don't make, just remember, at least you're not making the stupid moves this year. At least it doesn't feel that way. That's it for us. Stillman and Company, we're out of here. Our kind of final hockey discussion of the off season is tomorrow. So be listening for that. Stillman and Company, 125, 106 The Game.